For a lot of years, I lived down in the Caribbean, in the Dominican Republic, up in the mountains. And this is a story that comes out of that time, and it's called The Dance. Years and years ago, 500 more or less, if we believe the history books, Cristobal Colón stepped ashore a beautiful island he found slumbering beneath a tropical sun lapped by the soft, sensual tongue of the Caribbean. Today, if you peer beyond political strife and the frantic tourist resorts, you can find her slumbering still. Hispaniola, a single island fractured by colonial history, war, religion, and genetics into two unfriendly neighbors, French Creole Haiti and Spanish Dominican Republic. But all that's a very large story, spanning land and sea and down through long stretches of time. This is a very small story that carries us into a hidden pocket of the Dominican Mountains and into a single afternoon. If you leave the coastal city of Santo Domingo and drive north on the country's main highway through rice paddies, banana plantations, and fields of tobacco and sugarcane, you will come after perhaps 2 hours to a narrow, winding road that leaves the humid lowlands and climbs up into the Cordillera Central. There, at the northeast end of a small, fertile valley, lies the town of Jarabacoa. You can leave the town by crossing a bridge and then turn right to follow down the Yaqui River. And if you follow the rutted track for perhaps 5 miles through and over the hills until it unravels and disappears into the yards of a scattered collection of shacks and farmhouses. The dwellings, perhaps 20 in number, they're nestled in folds of the hills or rooted deep in the rich soil beside the river. They're simply constructed, thatch or tin roofs, concrete or dirt floors, and walls made of split or sawn pine or royal palm that fleck the pastured hills. In the evening, multitudes of silent cattle egrets flock across the fields of beans and corn and cassava to roost high above the coffee plantations and turn the tropical trees to snowy white. It's peaceful there, beyond the reach of electricity and traffic. And the sounds you hear are the cackling of chickens as they speak to each other of pride and congratulations, the occasional sighing bray of a donkey, and the sough of the dying wind in the pine trees. Just recently, one spring, but I guess 20 years ago now, the local people decided to have a dance. No one had died for a number of months, not even the newborn, and so no one was in deep mourning. Still, poor farmers living next to the earth and embedded deeply in her rhythms are never far from suffering and grief. But that's another story and not fit for tonight. So it was one sunny Sunday afternoon in March or April or maybe even June, these boundaries blur in time, a band set out from Jarabacoa on foot, carrying their instruments with them. It was a warm sunny day and the steaming mud was drying to dirt. And as they trod the flowered hills, they didn't begrudge the hour and a half that was thus carved from their lives. About the time the band left the town, the last young women from the village finished washing their clothes in the stream that ran beside the schoolyard, went home, and took the curlers out of their hair. They put on their very best clothes, and they painted their face with lipstick rouge and eyeshadow. A short time later, the band still far away, the first young men rode in from distant parts. They dismounted, careful not to scuff their fresh shined boots or stain their best white shirts, and tied their horses beneath the giant amapola tree amongst the fallen blossoms that lay like a bed of cold in the corner of the schoolyard. Loose with each other, as young men only can be when they're free of the female presence, they laughed and joked, waiting for and greeting friends as they arrived. A bottle went round, Bermudez rum, and all took turn, no matter that some were too poor to turn about. At last they heard, no, not yet, yes, yes, the first faint sounds of music coming down around the long curve that led into the village. The band was playing as they came to wake the people, to call them from their homes, to set their spirits free. By 2:30, the band owned one corner of the large empty schoolroom, The leader played the concertina and sang the lyrics, and then the others backed him up, repeating the lyrics exactly a second time. And that format never varied. The second member of the band sat on his large wooden bass box and plucked the same four deep notes from four tuned metal prongs over and over again. The youngest one, a dark-eyed youth, swayed to the rhythms he coped from his small metal-ridged guira with a thin steel rod. And the fourth member of the band hung a two-headed drum around his neck, and with his left hand he pounded out the main beat, and with a length of wood in his right hand he cracked the far end, smacking the rim for accent whenever the mood struck him. Following the music, the first young women began to arrive. The racy ones at first, hot and ready for action. And then, after a decent interval, the more proper young ladies, fresh back from mass in town. Shy with each other at first, they all hung back, and then little by little, as the rum took effect, they started to dance. One, two, a pair here, a couple there, until finally all of them were dancing. Slowly, other people began to arrive. Young parents at first, some with infants in arms, and then the very old, the grandparents, grandmother's grandfather, and then finally the middle-aged householders, until the whole village and surrounding hills were crowded into the schoolhouse dancing. The mood was electric. The band pounded out the merengue music as loud as they could, vibrant, full of energy. Oh God, the music was awful. But as the band got lubricated, and as the dancers got more and more soused, the music got better and better, or at least it seemed to. Everybody, or almost everybody, danced every dance. A retarded man, young guy, with his baseball cap on sideways, and this was in the years before it was cool to do that, he asked the prettiest girl if she'd dance with him, and she smiled and said yes. She had to. It was the rule. If she hadn't danced with him, she couldn't have danced with anyone until she danced with him. Everyone danced with everyone else. When they thought the time was right, the band left their corner and, still playing their instruments, snaked their way through the sweaty press of bodies. And this was the signal that at the end of this dance, every man was obliged to invite his partner to the bar for a beer or a soft drink. And then after a short rest, they would start playing again. In the break, the bottle went round again. The men drank straight from the bottle, of course, but the women, more delicate, daintily filled the screw cap, and then they too knocked it straight back. And now everyone was dancing, four generations dancing together. Sweethearts pressing close, grandparents showing the young kids the basic steps, and sisters showing younger brothers the fancy twirls. Parents with infants in arms settling in the beat early before the tykes could even walk. And the very old, the ancient ones, barely able to move, leaning heavily on their canes and shuffling their feet in the 1-2 rhythm of the merengue. In that place, people danced their way into life, and then they danced their way into the grave. Ah, but now the grave was far away, conquered by the growing joy of the dance. A disturbance at the door broke the spell. A sort of surge came through the room as the dancers gave way for the fat, rich people come down from the hill. Biro Rosita, Little Rose. They forged through the room like two barges trying to force their way into a narrow harbor. And Rosita collapsed into a chair, a hog into a wallow. Biro chose to stand. Someone politely asked after his health, and he said, "Better, but not good." Biro had a very large boil on his ass. This was important village news. After all, he couldn't ride forth to inspect his lands, his cattle, his peons. After a short obligatory stay, without deigning to dance, they left, and everyone breathed a sigh of relief. as the circle of energy closed and gathered them all in.
Bellies pressing, thighs thrusting, legs between legs. Music pounding louder, stronger, more demanding. Room rocking, outside world forgotten. Time and space suspended. Fear, pain, and sorrow conquered. Only the dance carrying them away. Yet beyond the walls, time still marched. A pickup arrived to carry the drunken band back to town to play another gig. They settled into the back of the truck, and some young men from the village who wanted to visit dance halls, bars, poorhouses, climbed in too. As the driver throttled up the hill, the band played on, and a crowd of laughing, shouting children ran behind. When the band had gone, the older, more settled people drifted away to their homes to take care of chores, prepare dinner, put the little ones to bed. But the youth lingered on, unable to loose themselves from the magic. Someone owned a cheap, battery-powered record player, and one scratchy old merengue record. They put it on and played it over and over and over and continued to dance. Only the three or four closest couples could actually hear the music, but they picked up the beat and passed it on, sharing it with the rest through the strong 1-2 scrape of their feet across the concrete floor. The others could hear only that, but it was enough, and they all moved together in perfect rhythm. Again their joy climbed as the light faded from the evening sky, and the cattle egrets flocked to roost. The wind picked up and flung down a cascade of amapola blossoms that swirled like sparks in the deepening night. Dark clouds piled up in the east, and the first heavy drops of rain pelted the tin roof, completely drowning out the faint music. But the dancing continued, and nobody cared. Nobody cared.